back to Smell You Later, your favorite podcast about, what is it about today, Tynan?
It is about discovering that you're afraid of heights.
Discovering that you're afraid of heights.
Yes.
What is that called? Tall phobia?
Agoraphobia.
Agoraphobia.
Agoraphobia is fear of spiders.
No, that's arachnophobia. Agoraphobia is fear of crowds and going outside.
Well, I have all of them.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. I probably have a little bit of agoraphobia, but arachnophobia, no, just don't surprise me.
That's my thing. With a spider?
With spiders, just don't surprise. Don't sneak up on me. If I'm
What's
like,
the alternative? When you expect announce its yourself. Arrival?
Yes, please announce yourself and be like, don't be scared, I'm here.
Don't be scared. I'm a terrifying insect with 8 legs and 1,000 eyes.
They're just little. The ones we have here. I feel like if, like in Australia, they have those insanely huge hunter spiders. I'm like,
You immediately bringing up Australia.
I would move. If I saw one in my home, I would simply move.
Yeah. The reason the heights thing came up was because there was an event last night for Hugo Boss, their new fragrance launch. It is a quote-unquote men's fragrance, and it's their massive global launch for the year, and they had this event that I couldn't have RSVP'd to faster because it just sounded big and crazy. Yeah. And I was like, well, I got to see this.
Which is funny because I got that same invite and it sounded big and crazy. And I was like, absolutely not.
It was Maluma, Bradley Cooper, and this other gentleman who I did not know, which of course means he's an athlete. Mm-hmm. And Maluma performed at the top of the Empire State Building. Woo. And then afterwards, they carted us all to Mercer Labs, which is right outside of Battery Park, which is very South Manhattan, for a big sort of party part two. So yeah, we got up to the top of the Empire State Building, and it wasn't the heights that scared me. It was really beautiful to see New York that high. Mm-hmm. But it was being so close to that Art Deco spire that I can see very clearly from my apartment 3 miles away.
Yeah.
That my body just had this response. This isn't right. This is unnatural. Get down from there.
Yeah. When you start to think about where you are and how high up you're like, I don't think that's right.
You know
right.
that feeling when your balls just suck up into your body because you're so scared? It was that. Oh my God. I don't even think
you know, I don't, but I can see what you mean.
Well, then we went to Mercer Labs, and Mercer Labs, I'm still like not quite clear on. It's like a digital art museum. That's not correct. It's a lot of really beautiful light installations and mirrors and screens. So a lot of it is digitized, but it's beautiful. It is, the ticket's pretty hard to get in for just a normal day in New York. So it was nice to be there, care of a brand. And it was very cool. It was a very big sort of New York night out.
Yeah.
And it was fun, but I don't ever need to be up that high again. But thank you, Hugo Boss, for introducing me to new things.
People pay to go up that high. There's like a line out the building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was fun. The fragrance from what I can... I left the event and I was like, I've never smelled that. But isn't that crazy?
I feel like fragrance events like that are never about the smell.
Yeah. It was wafting through. I could tell. I kept smelling one goddamn thing and I was like, it's got to be that.
Like
it's very...
you're just in a big marketing ad, basically.
Exactly. Literally immersive.
It's an interactive campaign. Yeah. Immersive campaign.
From what I got, it's ginger, leather... and that's all I know.
Yeah.
But it was lovely. The whole place smelled great.
Cool.
Yeah. That's okay.
There were just, I think like the invitation was like, and Maluma will be there and Bradley Cooper will be there. And I'm like, that has nothing to do with me. Absolutely nothing. If you're not feeding me, then, and I don't know, there's nothing else like other activity that would delight me. I'm like, no.
It would have been the worst night of your life. I'm going to be honest.
Not me.
Uh-uh. I did meet. I don't know her name. I'm going to sound so stupid. I met a big fragrance influencer, TikToker. And
did you know who they were beforehand?
I did. Because I recognize her. She, short, sort of hazel hair, full neck tattoos. I guarantee you've seen her. Really sweet woman. Really fun to chat with her and her partner, who I believe was her brother. Son's boyfriend. Not the same. So I just look over and I was like, you know when like you see someone off the screen and you're like,
I never know who anybody is.
I know. Well, clearly I don't know her name, but she was a very, very sweet woman.
By the time this episode comes out, this will be a couple of weeks later, but like I was talking about the Daisy Wild. It was so intense a couple of weeks ago, and I got the bottles. They're so cute. I love them. They're growing on my Daisy garden, which I think I need to move it. I don't know.
It's growing. Your garden is growing.
It's growing. I'm running out of space and I want to do a lot of changes to my apartment. And I don't know what that is, but I'm just like, it's stale in here and it has to change.
It's not stale. It's beautiful.
I don't know. I didn't paint anything when I moved in and I'm like, that was a mistake. So we'll see where the Daisy Garden moves. But they're so cute.
So I fell in love with the original Daisy Wild last year. It is the sort of mint green juice with the top with green, pink, and white flowers and the little fake stems in the bottle. It's the
I think the stems in the bottle is such a clever nice addition.
This is the one that I said smelled like specifically a Barbie that came with a body glitter lotion that I had when I was younger. I love it. It's such a joyful, lovely fragrance. And even
this smells the most similar to the original to me.
I'll meet you halfway there. Yeah. I disagree, but I also agree.
Mm-hmm. Disagree, but I also
it's
just, agree.
It's such a lovely, pleasant, even detaching myself from that memory. It's so lovely and just so fun to wear.
Yeah.
And then,
but I love the Oh So Intense one because of the banana.
So there's banana in the original, but in the
it's like they
Intense,
really,
they like really juiced up. God, it is really
it's crazy banana-y.
Yeah.
I love it. But then I feel like within 15 minutes, the banana dries down and then it just becomes this kind of almost lactonic texture to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. On me. On me.
On me.
To me.
The tine and punctuation. Yeah. To me. Yeah, this is quite banana heavy.
Which I guess like on first spray, if you weren't expecting like banana run candy, you'd be like, ugh.
Would you, not knowing there was banana in here, would you clock it?
Yes. It's pretty forward.
You're right. You're right.
Pretty heavy banana forward.
I mean, we keep seeing more and more bananas, and I think
I'm telling
that
you,
banana is I think it's polarizing.
It is. But I think polarizing things are successful because the people who like it really like it.
Yeah. And it feels
they're freaks for it.
It feels new. Yeah. It feels like something that we haven't treaded yet. I lost my train of thought.
Banana and caramel, we called it.
We did call it.
Yeah.
I was talking to a couple girls last night at the event and one of them loved banana, one of them hated it. But I think that sort of where I stand is I am a lover of it, but I prefer not to know it's in there.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Because then your mind immediately picks it up.
Exactly. I think it gives this really nice warm sweetness in the way of like a tonka.
Yeah.
You know, that's not saccharine, but it is sweet. But it's like, it's like if I know that there's peanut butter in a sauce, like a peanut sauce, I don't want to know that.
Yeah,
just like, it's good, but I don't want to know how it's made.
Uh-huh.
That's how I feel about banana.
Because it makes it all about itself.
Exactly.
Like peanut butter and banana are just like, tastes like me now.
Yeah.
Me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, we know you're here.
But on the other hand, it's like, I am that insufferable bitch that needs to know the build of all of my fragrances. So it's sort of like a...
I like to know eventually.
Yeah.
Most, it's funny because like most, I feel like I'm that person who like guesses the answers in Jeopardy or something and with full confidence wrong the whole time. That's me. Like, it's this. And like, it is not this. And I'm like, okay.
It's part of the magic of fragrance.
It's part of the magic.
I don't know. Marc Jacobs does it again.
Yeah. They're rolling out their Perfect Absolute campaign. And I'm just like, it's funny because that was also in our little Coty lab sample bag.
Yeah.
I didn't love the Absolute.
Really?
And it sounded good because they were like, it's a juicy fig, but something about
it. I thought it was plum.
I think plum as well, but something about it reads car air freshener to me.
Is it on your, is it the gold one?
It's not, I don't have the bottle. I just have the lab.
We're getting it live, girls. This is Marc Jacobs Hour on Smell You Later. It's fine if you don't have it. You like the original Perfect, right?
I really like the Perfect Intense too.
Okay, but what the fuck is that then?
This is Perfect by Marc Jacobs Absolute.
I appreciate Perfect. It's definitely not a me scent, but I'm Perfect is the only franchise from Marc Jacobs that I'm a little less, I'm a little more tepid on.
Yeah.
But again, it didn't start out as something that I resonated with me, so.
Mm-hmm. I really like it, but because it's so almond heavy, sometimes I'm like, not today.
Wait, I really like this.
It's weird because now that I'm smelling it again, I'm like, wait, maybe I do like this.
That's so
pretty. What's wrong with me? I remember smelling it the first time and being like, ew, I got a lot of berries, like red berries. And I was like, ew, why? But now I'm not getting it.
I feel like you are more prone to changing your mind, though, than I am.
I don't know about that. Now I'm like, wait a minute. This smells different than I remember.
This is nice.
Yeah. Shit. I should have called that in, too.
We know where to find them.
Next time. Next time. Even though, will I ever wear more than that lab sample bottle? Probably not.
So. Hardly the point.
Yeah. I just like the bottles.
The point is greed.
The point is they're cute and I want them.
I mean, that's
greed. The point is greed. God. Tynan, what do you smell like today?
Oh my God. Well, I can't smell anything now because our room is filled with fragrance. I called in the new Valentino collection that we've been chatting about.
I want to smell those.
Valentino Born in Roma. ivory.
Ivory.
Because the bottles are ivory. And yesterday I wore, and I know that we don't gender sense, but there's a men's and a women's, so follow me here. I wore the women's, and
they sent you the men's and the women's?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I demanded them. And I was a little struck by it starts off pretty aldehydic and white florally with a very clear, fluffy, creamy vanilla motive. It's not a vanilla scent, don't get me wrong, but that's sort of where it takes you to. It's trying to harness the milky, creamy vanilla. It looks like an ivory fragrance, you know, or it smells like an ivory fragrance. It's a nice, soft, sweet take on Born Aroma.
Yeah.
Liked it a lot. I'm wearing the men's version today, and though I usually like the scents for the girlies more, this one I think is a real heater. It, again, takes a much creamier way in, but there's a smoky woodiness at the bottom that is really beautiful and grounds it in a way that I was craving from the other one in the collection. It's so, so nice.
Would I like it?
All the, you decide.
It's a lot more subtle than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
And like soft.
Yeah. It's quite soft. Yeah. It's quite soft. All that the build gives you is lavender, bergamot, and what they're calling a fireplace accord. And
now I want it.
It's nice.
I really am that child who's like, you have it, I want it.
It gives you this sort of charred, smoky, but when I think fireplace specifically, it brings me to like baking spices and hazelnut, probably just because I'm too like Margiela by the fireplace pilled.
I was gonna think like smoky wood.
Smoky wood and sweet.
A little bit of char.
But that's just a personal, that's where the fireplace takes me specifically. So I don't know, man, this is real, real nice. The bergamot winks at this sort of men's cologne convention right now, but this is a really fluffy, smoky, lovely take on a quote unquote men's scent. If I could liken it to anything, it would be Commodity Milk. Loud, or whatever the fuck.
Bold.
Bold. Yeah. It's walking down that street. And it's really, really nice. I'm definitely going to wear this again.
I want that now.
Yeah.
I'm going to call that shit in.
Do it. Sable, what do you smell like today?
All right. So I smell like a girl named Layla. Is it Lila or Layla?
I think it's Layla.
Layla by Toca. Remember Toca? I feel like she was like the fairy girl or like princess girl scents of the 2000s, and they all had names like Stella and Florence, and I'm forgetting all the names. You know them. And Layla is our newest release. I feel like they were quiet for a long time.
I wish they'd stayed quiet.
And then, okay. This is their first gourmand, allegedly. Even though I'm kind of like, y'all never did a gourmand in like 13 girls' names.
I'm telling you, all their shit was so floral and like caustic.
It's all floral. Ugh. It's just florals. So it's interesting that they called this a gourmand because I'm like, no, it's not.
It's gourmand in the context of Toca.
I don't think that is a thing.
It is.
I don't think they have a context.
Remember, like, I do think it's important to consider the world in which something lives. Like, they're not going to give you a warm vanilla sugar. Everything that they do is going to be like floral heavy, you know, to me.
Well, I don't know about that. I think times have changed. They can give you gourmand if they're saying, or at least a little bit more gourmand. The notes list says green mandarin, bergamot, desert rain accord.
That I think is cool.
Yes. Jasmine nectar, lily of the valley, cardamom blossom, and then toasted vanilla, white woods, and golden amber. And I'm like, okay, so vanilla is your gourmand? I just think that it's a misleading. You can say with a touch of gourmand, but I don't think you should lead with gourmand. And that's just me critiquing the copy. But it's just like a floral. Hmm. A floral ambery, honestly. And I'm like, another one got by Sephora. The Sephora body snatcher once again. Well, it's just a floral amber.
I don't want to be a little rat about this fragrance because I did call it in. I haven't worn it yet. I have historically really, I would say, not gravitated toward them. I hate them. I read that build and I was like, you know what? She sounds cute.
Yeah.
Where's she been?
Yeah.
And on the blotter, I've not worn it on skin yet because I'm trepidatious, but I think it's more interesting than you do.
I think it's a pleasant, lovely floral amber.
Wait, let me smell it on you.
That's just, okay. This just smells like a perfume. It's just a perfume smell.
I think it smells more interesting on the blotter than it does on skin, but I don't mind it. I don't mind.
It's nice, but it's just like you smelled it a thousand times before, you know?
Hmm.
And The other...
Yeah, but do you go to Toca for newness?
Exactly. The other Toca fragrances, I do like some of them. I like Florence and I like Stella. And again, they're not groundbreaking, but they are really pretty. This one is probably, I feel like the, like Layla is probably the boldest one that I've experienced, but it's bold in the way that like all fragrances are bold now. But like everything is just this really punchy floral amber. There's no nuance to it.
Yeah. I'm happy that they didn't just load it with Jasmine Sambac and call it a day. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't think I could, I smell the composition. Nothing particularly stands out to me in
this. Sure.
And some people like that.
Yeah.
I don't.
For Toca being a brand that I don't really love, I think I appreciate this take on it.
Because it smells the least like them.
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
I've always liked the brand since I was like a teenager. I think just because to me, they read as very sophisticated, very like Principessa, very almost fantasy-like.
Sure.
And because at the time, especially, I was really into the florals. So I was like, yes, this is all like pretty grown-up girl smells. Like, great. And now I don't like that as much. So I'm like, oh, okay.
What's the price point on this?
I think the 50 ml is 80 something.
So I asked because this bottle and cap are so heavy. This feels so nice.
Yeah,
in the
bottles are really lovely. I love the design of them.
I know.
86 for 50 ml. 140. Yeah, 142 for 100. That's really not bad.
That's great. And again, I'm looking at this Krigler bottle with the 1 ounce plastic cap that it's like, this is $800. What are you doing?
Yeah.
This feels really nice.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like, it's custom. It's very much a beautiful object to have on your dresser.
It is.
It's also a weapon. Bludgeon somebody. That's the thing. They say like, as a woman, you should have a weapon by your bed. I was like, I have a perfume collection.
Yeah.
Those Bond number 9 bottles.
Those Louboutin bottles.
Yeah.
Try me.
Yeah. But yeah, I am interested to revisit some of their scents because I have not in a while. And I think they released a couple within the past, I don't know how many years, but.
Well, it's funny thinking back when we, sorry, my voice is cracking. I feel like right when we started writing about beauty, they were such a mainstay in Sephora.
Yep.
And obviously fragrance is so far from what it is today. And there were far less brands in Sephora and far less profiles that people were looking for. And I remember Toca as a major player in Sephora.
Totally.
And when I got this pitch, I was like, damn, they're still around. So I don't
know.
They were
quiet for a while and then they're coming. And I guess like it makes sense they're coming back now because fragrance is so hot right now. So they're like, yeah, let's go.
Well, and I'm sure that they are seated deep within the psyche of the millennial crowd. So there's like the nostalgia play, there's the awareness.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, what am I?
It all pretty much makes sense. But
yeah, I would be interested to revisit some of those scents. But again,
let me know how that goes.
I'm like, I'm not that girl anymore. So I'm like, this doesn't really resonate with me. Hmm. But they're pretty.
And they came out with a solid as well.
Yeah, they also sent me this, which like, I'm genuinely curious, do people wear solids?
I think that is a good question because I've been seeing more and more solids happening. Why? Noise has a new fragrance called Only Human, and they put it out in obviously an ADP in a solid format. I don't know why I put on the solid. I don't really care about solids, but I was surprised pleasantly by the throw of the Noise solid. Like if I bought that, I would feel like I definitely got my money's worth out of it.
Yeah, you can't get away with like quiet solids now.
No, but I feel like that's what they are. I'm usually quite let down by a solid. But again, it's sort of like expectation. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get a ton from like a balm. But
they're meant to be like travel friendly.
We're seeing solids from Cydia, Toca, Noise. I don't know. It's interesting because obviously body sprays are so hot right now, which is another format. But are we going to be seeing more solids?
I want to say probably not, but who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? I'm genuinely curious. Who's balming themselves up?
I think.
Who's doing it?
You're right. They're more travel friendly and durable, but which I suppose might be the same thing. But I think they're also like an object which people are craving.
That's the thing. They're usually in like beautiful little compacts.
Exactly. Like the Cydia one's gorgeous, but they feel, what's the word I'm looking for? Like totems or.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a Diptyque solid years and years ago that was like so punchy that it honestly made me nauseous. It was their like 34 cent.
Oh
yeah,
that
Hugh
Banks wears that. I like that a lot actually, but I see it.
Yeah, it's not for me.
That on a hot day is like a no-go.
And that's when I was like, the solid's too strong.
Yeah,
it's too strong,
get it off me.
But beautiful compact. Yeah.
Have you smelled Only Human from Noise?
I've been consistently meh by Noise scents, so I just stopped.
I thought we liked Detour.
I thought it was meh.
I liked it. I smelled it at your place and I called it in.
I was like, it's fine.
I like Noise. They're fine.
they're fine. That's the thing. I'm like, they're fine. I'm like, okay.
I think what I like about them is that they don't feel to me for what they are and who they're for. They don't feel like a chop shop of just the same idea over and over. I mean, Shitty Day isn't for me, but it does feel new.
True.
Because of that eucalyptus note. Yeah. My favorite's Unmute, and okay, Devil's Advocate, maybe that one isn't groundbreaking, but I do love that one. I thought Detour was a nice new idea. Mm-hmm. I think there's some pleasant stuff, some unique stuff going on there.
They had a Baccarat dupe as well. I think it was called like 00
Night. Did they?
Yeah. It was like very Baccarat.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that.
But, and then like once a brand does that, I'm okay. Right. I get it.
Yeah. Flop. They're on all Sephora doors. So if I was them, I would do it too. But yeah, I don't know. I've seen brands that are more quote unquote exclusive and expensive do way more boring shit than Noise. So
fair.
Shout out.
But in front of us are two fragrances from Abel, which is a naturals-based fine fragrance line. The founder is from New Zealand, and then their primary perfumer is also from New Zealand. Mm-hmm. But they also have another perfumer as well. And I had been familiar with Abel for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
A few years now.
Yeah. I know about them through you.
Yeah. And they are, I think as of this episode, have just relaunched like a rebrand with these beautiful, weighty, horizontal-shaped bottles. It's like a midsection of a cone.
Yeah.
And it's a frosted glass, and they're clearly custom molded. It's the cap is made of, I think they said, like biodegradable plastic or from upcycled plastic. Mm-hmm. I have liked a few of their scents and kept them in my rotation for years. I've always loved Pink Iris and Cyan Nori, and I also really liked Black Anise. And they're relaunching the whole brand. They're renaming a couple scents. I think, as far as we know, Black Anise will be renamed to Coat Check.
Yes.
But the bottles look so cool.
So cool.
And the smells are so good.
I really like all of their fragrances that I have smelled. I really like Coat Check, FKA Black Anise. Like, smelling it right now.
Yeah.
This is so a me fragrance. It's not even funny. Yeah. It's sweet. Yeah. It's spicy. It's leathery. It's warm. Ugh.
It's a little boozy too.
So it's pretty boozy, honestly.
Yeah, it's quite boozy. Pink Iris has been one of my mainstays.
Yes.
It's like a salty, like a minerally salty iris.
It smells different than I remember it, but yeah, you're right.
I love the saltiness of it. And I think, I want to say that the pink was also in reference to pink Himalayan sea salt.
Oh.
I believe. Or just pink pepper. Could be pink pepper too, because I'm pretty sure pink pepper is in this. But it's, I guess like I would categorize this as like a fresh fragrance, but because of the iris, it's very soft and enveloping and cozy. But then the minerally...
I'd put it in the floral.
Technically, yeah, because it's an iris. I don't get overly floral.
I agree with you there, yeah.
It is a very soft... And then the salt gives it like a little bit more of a translucent, minerally kind of texture.
Pink Iris feels more minimal to me.
Yeah.
Than if we're putting it right up against Coat Check.
For sure.
And Cyan Nori.
Yeah, Cyan Nori is very fresh and aquatic in an interesting way, because you do get the seaweed, the nori, but it's not like in that briny, like tide pool way. It's like a, again, like a salty green marine.
This one, if any of them are salty, it's this one.
Oh, for sure, definitely. So nice. It's just like also such an interesting olfactive exercise.
Yeah.
Because I've never smelled a seaweed fragrance before. And this is so well done that it's not like a stunt fragrance. You're getting a really sophisticated, I don't know, rendition of seaweed. It's a cold beach. I think it was explained as like it's a cold beach in New Zealand. So it's not like a tropical beachy fun hot sand beach.
Right.
It's like a cold beach, which is really cool.
Cyan Nori to me is really photorealistic of that scene.
Yeah,
it's
very
transportive in that way.
Totally. We have the, I don't know if the official title is main perfumer, but the perfumer for several of Abel's scents, Isaac Sinclair. I interviewed him years ago for a Harper story when he was living in Brazil, and he was a delight to chat to. So I'm really glad we get to catch up again.
Yeah.
I'm Isaac Sinclair, and I'm a perfumer from New Zealand. I work at a company called Symrise, which is a big international fragrance house, and currently based in Paris.
Ooh, you're global.
Yeah, lucky. And we always kick off by asking, what do you smell like today?
I think fresh and clean. I actually really only wear perfumes when I'm developing it to see how they kind of evolve on skin. Mm-hmm. And it's weird, like, before I was a perfumer, I would be wearing perfumes all the time. And now that I'm a perfumer, actually, quite often, basically, I don't wear perfumes because if you're working on a new project, you go into the office. Mm-hmm. And if you're wearing a perfume, it can really interfere with your development. Right. So in general now, I think I smell neutral, I'd say.
Nice. I feel like every time we ask perfumers this question, they're just like, I don't wear perfume.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I do, but like it's, how can I put it? It's for a specific reason. Mm. So sometimes you create a fragrance and it smells amazing. And when you put it on skin, there's a different aspect that you hadn't noticed just smelling on paper. And so it's really important to wear them. But usually we do that in the evening because once you've got a perfume on, imagine you're working on some oriental fragrance and then you're wearing another oriental fragrance. Oh, we can't say that. Ambery. Ambery fragrance. Ambery. Yeah, so imagine you're wearing some super strong ambery fragrance, and then you're also working on another fragrance, which is, let's say, floral, where you're not going to be able to evaluate it really, you know, if you're smelling something else. And it's funny with perfumery, it's really funny how context is so important. Like if you're smelling three different fragrances, one of them could smell different depending on what the other two fragrances are. So, you know, if you're smelling one really vanilla fragrance and two fresh fragrances, then the vanilla one's going to be really obviously vanilla. Whereas if you're smelling that same fragrance with two other ambery, vanilla-y fragrances, the way you perceive it is actually different.
That's a really good point. Right. It's like direct comparison side by side.
Right. It's really interesting. Sometimes even when you're working on a perfume for months, you just smell it next to a different kind of benchmark. And it's like, whoa, I never smelled that.
Wow.
I never thought about that. That's such a...
Yeah.
But you're right. I feel like every time we ask a perfumer, like, what do you smell like today? They're usually like, nothing.
Well, I mean, if you're a music producer and you're producing a new record, you can't have other music playing in the room as you're doing that.
Yeah. That's so interesting because then say you're getting ready to go to work and like you're showering in the morning. Do you purposefully keep unscented like bath products to use?
Not necessarily, but... Yeah, I know other perfumers do. I remember reading one time that Jean-Claude Elena, he wouldn't use fabric softener because, you know, he'd go to bed at night and his pillow would be smelling too strong, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, wow. I can see that.
So
I guess when scent is your job. Yeah,
definitely you wouldn't want to be wearing some crazy conditioner, which is super strong. You know, I remember sometimes you ask someone, oh, your perfume wearing is amazing. And they're like,
that's true. I have smelled like the trail of shampoo on someone and it's so fragrant. And I'm like, Jesus, like you rinsed this out. Like, how am I smelling this 5 feet from you?
Right.
Something you mentioned, I'm curious in the perfume world, like amongst your colleagues, have they adopted the use of ambery in place of oriental?
Well, I mean, I think it really depends where you are. Less so in Europe, I think. Because I think at the end of the day, it's kind of, it's an English-speaking term, let's say. So if you're French or Italian, it actually doesn't make really much sense.
Right.
So in our world, let's say the Anglo-Saxon world, it makes sense, but not so much if you're from a non-English-speaking country. Because there was never any...
There's no, like, political connection as much.
Exactly. And, you know, here you wouldn't... People don't even use that term, so that, you know, they really don't care. So actually, in Paris, nobody's really... You know, everybody just says what they used to say. But again, it's cultural. Like here, it has no bad connotations. So.
I noticed that on Guerlain's website, they changed the product copy of Shalimar to ambery. So I was like, oh, okay, if Guerlain is changing the terminology, then this is really happening.
Right.
Well, I mean, I think on the brand side, maybe you have to because, of course, they sell, you know, everywhere in the world. So they have to, you know, they're like an international brand. But the day-to-day at work, I mean, yeah, again, it doesn't really mean anything to Italians or Portuguese or Spanish or French. Or as soon as you're not in an English-speaking country, it's kind of doesn't, you're like, why?
Yeah, I was always curious because I felt like it was more of a cultural movement outside of the perfumer world. And then the industry was just like, it's just a technical term. What do you mean?
Yeah, I think one of the reasons I got into the perfume industry is thanks to Michael Edwards, who's a perfume expert. And he was one of the people behind this, you know, let's change the name. And I had a conversation with him. And interesting, he said that it was actually always ambery. So like, if you look 100 years ago, it was actually ambery. And I think, you know, 70s, 80s, they kind of changed the olfactive family.
Interesting.
So it's not, you know, it wasn't always that way either. So It's not like we're rewriting history, because before it was Ambry anyway. So, like, you know, when Guerlain first launched those fragrances, it would have been Ambry.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Which makes more sense, because I feel like Ambry is a descriptor of like an actual scent.
Yeah.
So that just makes sense.
Right. Totally.
So we just get us started here. We are curious, what scents were impactful to you growing up in New Zealand? And then how did you find your way to studying perfumery?
Yeah, I guess there's two kind of sides to the answer. One is actual perfumes. So growing up in New Zealand, I think it's a market that kind of follows the US. You know, basically, like we say in the perfume world, there's the kind of like Latino brands, and then there's the more kind of Northern European kind of brands. So I think definitely like the US and England have all got a kind of similar vibe. So I grew up basically smelling all the same fragrances that I imagine you guys did. CK1.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know.
All the aquatic fresh ones.
But then in terms of being in New Zealand, I think I smelled lots and lots of things, which it's not necessarily the smell of the flora we have in New Zealand, which is unique. So I think I was really lucky to kind of growing up smelling a lot of different smells, but they weren't always necessarily perfumes. And when you think New Zealand, you think, oh, the mountains and it's cold, but that's down in the South Island. I'm from the North Island, which is actually subtropical. So... Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'd go to school, waiting for the school bus where, there'd be like ginger blossom, you know, like pretty, let's say it's not exotic when you're from New Zealand, but it's definitely exotic.
Sure.
If you're in Europe. So yeah. And because it's subtropical, there's actually lots and lots of flowers, which only bloom because you have a cold winter. So as soon as you don't have a cold winter, you don't have them. So hyacinth, Lily of the Valley, lilac. I'd never actually smelled them before I came to Europe. I was like, wow, what is this? So for me, coming here was actually just like, wow, such a discovery. Because, I'd be smelling Diorissimo, and that was really referenced to what Lily of the Valley smelled like. And then so when you're really smelling the real flower one day, it's like, wow. And yeah, so what happened, I was really passionate about perfumes, but in New Zealand, it's not like you can really be a perfumer. I think you really have to be, in one of the big centers like Paris or New York or Sao Paulo.
Yeah. I think you're the only Kiwi perfumer that I've ever heard of.
Yeah, same.
Right. I haven't met any others, at least. And the industry is really tiny. So I thought, how can I get into, perfume? It's a massive collection, which I'd started. And there was no kind of intention behind it. It was kind of subconscious. And I just started collecting these perfumes. And then one day, I had this eureka moment, and it was like, if I have all of these in my collection in front of me, somebody must do that. And I was like, what? Like, how did I not think of that before? You know, I've been collecting perfumes, just never occurred to me. And so I thought, how am I going to go about it? And of course, being in New Zealand, that's not exactly the best place to be. So what I did is I just started getting jobs, working with perfume in general. So I got retail jobs, working in department stores, just selling perfume. And I mean, that was amazing. There was one department store I was in called Smith & Coe's, which actually doesn't exist anymore, but there was basically no customers. So I would spend the entire day just smelling all of the perfumes. It was like, wow, I'm getting paid to do this. Anyway, so after maybe a year, I was like, you know, this is cool, but I really want to be on the creative side, not just selling. And I'd seen on the internet that quite a few people were saying you need a chemistry degree, but there were other articles saying not necessarily, because it's, you know, it's like artisan and an apprenticeship. So I was, you know, I wasn't, I didn't want to like run into doing a chemistry degree for a few years if it wasn't necessary. So,
right.
Anyway, so one day Michael Edwards comes to New Zealand to do a conference on perfumes, and I wasn't important enough to be invited. I wrote a little note like, hey, Michael, I'm really interested in perfumery. Do you think I should study chemistry or not? And I gave it to my boss, and she passed it to him during the conference. And then the next day, he actually came into the department store and said, ah, you Isaac? And I said, yes. I couldn't believe it.
Wow.
And so Michael Edwards says to me, you know, if you really want the answer, because he's a fragrance expert, you know, he's putting the fragrances in the olfactive families and things, but he's not actually a perfumer. So he said, look, I don't want to give you secondhand information, but if you go to Grasse in south of France in 2 months, there's this conference there, and there'll be lots of perfumers, and you can ask them. And so 2 months later, I had to ask my dad for some money, but 2 months later, I turned up in Bath, and he couldn't believe it. You know, he had this random conversation with this kid in Thailand, and
that's so cool.
I showed up. So then he introduced me to a perfumer, a pretty famous Martin Gras. He did like Bordeaux by Vivienne Westwood and Cerutier 1841. And he said, I can't believe you came from New Zealand just to ask this question. Do I study chemistry or not? You have to meet my boss. And
I mean, you really showed, you're like, I'm serious about this.
So he introduced me to his boss, who was, at the time was like the global head of fragrance for Symrise. And he said to me, no, perfumery is an art. What you need to do is study the five senses at the school in Milan. Don't study chemistry, do that. And he was like, do you have X amount of money to do the school? And I said, no. And he said, well, you know what? I'm going to give you a scholarship.
Whoa.
And then he said, oh, but the school's going to start in 2 months. So there's no point in going all the way back to New Zealand and then going to Milan for the School of the Five Senses. So why don't you just be an intern in our Paris office in the meantime? And and that was that. So I called my mom. I said, oh, I'm not going to come back straight away. And I was doing an intern in the Paris office. And then I did 2 years in Milan. Basically, it was a cool kind of art school where we literally studied the five senses. But I focused more on smell. And then after those 2 years, I became a full-time trainee perfumer in Paris.
Can you talk a little bit more about the School of the Five Senses? Because it sounds like something magical. Straight out of a fiction.
Everybody always asked me. Unfortunately, it doesn't exist anymore. But it was just this amazing kind of window of time. So basically, it was called L'Università dell'Immagine. And it was founded by Fabrizio Ferri, who's a fashion photographer. I don't know if you know Industria Super Studios.
I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, he was pretty famous in the 80s. And so he founded the school to study the five senses, and then Symrise came on kind of as a sponsor. So basically, you know, for touch, we had like textile experts because Milan is huge for the textile. So we'd be touching all the different fabrics, you know, for the texture. Yeah. And then obviously for the visual side, it was more the school was actually at the photography studios. So most of the people who went to the school were like really into photography. So that was the visual side. And then we had courses with Italian cuisine critics and things. It was incredible. We would do coffee tastings, olive oil tastings, Italian cheese tastings. Wow. And music, we had a guy from a well-known studio in Milan coming in. That was really interesting as well. Like sometimes we go to studios where they basically soundproofed it so well that if you stayed in the room for more than 10 minutes, you could start hearing your heartbeat.
I've heard of those.
People like lose their minds.
Right.
You know, my focus was on the perfume. So I was every day all the raw materials and kind of starting train. You know, so when I did become a trainee perfumer in Paris afterwards, I'd already kind of done the basics, let's say.
Wow.
That's so cool.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
I've never heard of anything like that.
I feel like I've also heard that it's expected that you take a chemistry or like biochemistry.
Yeah, I think it's a mixed bag. I think a lot of people, like if you look at probably most perfumers these days, yes, but traditionally no. So all of the perfumers from Grasse probably are more likely have to you know, learn from their dad or, you know, done it. By working with a master perfumer hand in hand over, you know, several years, you pick it up basically. So it was much more like artisanal.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
So you just never went back to New Zealand?
Yeah, I know. I go on holiday, like, you know, going for Christmas.
Do you think that maybe more now that there is a growing perfume culture in New Zealand happening?
Yes, for sure. I think in general, not just New Zealand, I think people are much more aware of perfumes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you look 20 years ago, it was really, the market was dominated by big players, Calvin Klein, Ralph Lauren. Whereas now I think with all these new kind of independent brands, it's actually a much more interesting field. So I think because of that, people are more interested as well. You know, you couldn't have the conversations we're having today about perfume 20 years ago because you just didn't have the variety, you didn't have the choice. So yeah, it definitely changed in New Zealand.
Yeah.
But again, New Zealand, apart from Abel, it's not like it's perfume central.
Sure.
I was thinking, I was like, I have literally never heard of any other perfume brand other than Abel from New Zealand. That's the only one I've heard of.
Right. But also, the thing is, Frances, she actually started the brand in Amsterdam as well. So I think, being international from the get-go kind of was what, made it work, basically. I think if she had just started from New Zealand, it would have been more tricky. I mean, there's only 5 million of us. So, if you want to sell our team, you have to look, elsewhere, man, perhaps.
Right. Yeah, you got to build the infrastructure. Yeah, yeah. So before you started working with Abel, you were living and working in Sao Paulo, is that right?
So I spent, as I was training as a perfumer, and then I spent maybe 8 years in Paris. I did a little stint in Germany. Mm-hmm. Our Symrise headquarters is in Germany. And basically at one point, Brazil, not many people know, but Brazil is actually the biggest market for fragrance. And depending on the exchange rate with the US dollar for value, but always for volume. So it's this really important market for perfume. So they said, you should go for 6 months to, study the market because it's really important, for our business. So basically I was supposed to go for 6 months. And then I asked my boss, can I stay another 6 months? And can I stay another year? And it ended up being 12 years.
Wow. Oh my gosh. I actually remember you told me that tidbit. I interviewed you 5 years ago or something for Harper's Bazaar story. And then you were like, actually, Brazil is the largest consumer of fragrances. And it had never occurred to me because I feel like our perspective is that fragrance is such a European industry and art form.
Yeah, I mean, it's how can I put it? I think if you included all of Europe, then it would probably be bigger. Mm-hmm. But for one country, the thing is Brazil's 200 million. Mm-hmm. Probably Europe is bigger if you put it all together for one country. Yeah, Brazil, they're just crazy about perfume.
Was there a huge cultural difference that you noticed with the way Brazilians wear perfume?
Yeah, right, for sure. I mean, Brazilians are just amazing. They're happy and vibrant, and they love to express themselves. So that reflects on the way you dress, but also the, the perfumes you'll use, and really eclectic. That's what I was most surprised about. I thought, because it's a tropical country, surely they just want to have fresh fragrances.
Yeah.
But not at all. You have these crazy, big, super sweet fragrances, and, it might be super hot outside, tropical heat, and they just don't care. They want to dance in the streets. And and the other thing is, I think it's a socioeconomic thing. So in Brazil, I think they did a study where the highest proportion of your income is spent on perfumes. So, maybe you earn a certain amount and then you spend a tiny little bit on perfumes. But for Brazilians, it's actually a big chunk of their income. So for them, it's really important. And because of that, I think performance is more important for them. Because if you spend, a significant amount of your money on a fragrance and then it doesn't last very long, you got ripped off.
Yeah, that's disappointing.
But if it lasts 2 days, it's I made a great deal.
I feel like at least in the US, we have Sol de Janeiro, which is a Brazilian themed brand founded by Koreans, which I think is so funny.
And very Americanized, our perception of what it's Sol de Janeiro is a cartoon.
No, it's cultural appropriation or something.
So one of Abel's pillars is the dedication to natural fragrance ingredients. So we're wondering what is, and this is not a trick question, but what does natural mean in the Abel world? And then how does it inform the fragrance profiles that you then create?
It seems kind of at face value to be kind of easy to answer, but it's actually not that easy because natural can mean lots of different things. But for Abel, basically it means that it's this fossil fuel free. And why is that? Because most of the most of the molecules, the olfactive molecules we use in perfumes, actually come from petrochemical origin. So Abel is not saying, we don't want any chemistry, but we want green chemistry. And that's the big thing. Mm-hmm. So there's at the end of the day, anything that smells, there's going to be chemistry involved. Because, even if you're making a natural essential oil, like lavender oil or something, but you have to distill it, right?
Yeah.
So there's a chemical reaction. So, that's basically what it comes down to. So anything that's not fossil fuel origin works because it's green. So there's quite a few molecules actually from the paper industry. Now we have this brand new tech called SimTrap, which we actually managed to capture the smell out of a water phase of ingredients that they've kind of used in the food industry. So it's upcycled. So let's say they're making like strawberry yogurt. So they have all these strawberries and then they were just kind of throwing away this water, which smelled like strawberries. Mm-hmm. And now we have this new tech where we can actually kind of re-extract the smell of the strawberries out of the water and then put it in the perfume.
Whoa.
Wow. I've never even heard of that.
Upcycling smells. What a concept. Thing,
okay, strawberries like a cool so example, cool. But there's actually, we have everything now. This is 5 years maybe. Symrise calls it the collection. So this technology is basically in-house at Symrise. So the garden collection actually had leeks. We have, I mean, don't know if you want to put in your perfume, but this onion as well. So, of course, that's a chemical reaction because you're extracting something out of the water and there's test tubes and it goes through filters and all this kind of stuff. But it's not bad for the environment, let's say.
Wow. Oh, that's so neat. That's really cool.
I don't think this is an obvious question, but I've been wrong before. But then where do you stand on the use of synthetics? Because I know that title can be polarizing in fragrance, depending on who you talk to. So do you use synthetics in fragrances?
Because, I mean, really, Abel is an outlier. You always have to have, you know, one brand that starts something. So I think, you know, what Abel is doing is unique, but it's catching on for sure. And so, like, my job is making perfumes for everyone, not just Abel. So I'm using synthetics all the time. Mm-hmm. So I, generally speaking, I think it's okay, but I don't like it when they're not biodegradable, for example. Okay. Some of the ingredients are really not biodegradable. It's like forever plastics or something. So like, they're not going to put that one in the fragrance.
Yeah.
So I think it's, again, it's like often innovation comes from a smaller brand, which is at the forefront. And I think other brands are catching on.
Yeah.
I think even the bigger brands now, they're saying, okay, maybe we're not going to go 100% natural like Abel, but we want it to be 30% or, you know, that kind of is conscious. And there are other options.
Right.
And again, Abel had perfect timing because there's this new tech all the time. And actually, I guess when you look at petrochemical reactions, it's a little bit kind of like old school tech from 50 years ago or, you know, 80 years ago. But nowadays, there's actually much more interesting stuff going on. There's biotech. So it makes less and less sense as well. You know, if you can have a hydrogen car, why would you drive a petrol car? You know? But you couldn't have the hydrogen car 20 years ago.
It is funny. Like, we have electric vehicles now, and people still insist on driving petrol or, like, diesel vehicles because it's just, like, a weird... I don't know why there's, like, this weird attachment to this is the way it should be. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I think it was Mustang, when they released an EV model, they had a perfume made that smelled like gasoline. And only people who bought that car for like a certain amount would like get the perfume with it. So it's like, so you don't miss the smell of gasoline.
It's such a good marketing ploy, too.
But I thought that was funny because you're right. It's like, why would we continue using this technology that's harmful when we have alternatives? And people are like, no, this feels right to put gas in my car.
And I'm
like,
yeah. And I think in 20 years, we'll look back and just go, what were we thinking? But there's, again, there's any kind of new take, it always starts with a few people and then it basically just grows. So I think, Abel was kind of one of the catalysts for this whole.
Yeah. I do feel like natural perfumery or natural perfumes had this kind of crunchy reputation of like essential oils, and they maybe had one kind of scent profile you could do. But Abel's are very varied and they're like very sophisticated and complex and they don't smell like a quote unquote natural perfume necessarily. No. So it's once you have this example and this prototype, people are like, we can do this in an elevated way.
Right, but I think it's also kind of most of the brands who are doing that kind of natural perfumery were probably doing it themselves in their kitchen. So, you know, it's like this hippie thing or... This, you know, this is with Symrise behind it. I mean, we have whole scientists and laboratories in Germany coming up with new molecules and things. So, you know, having access to the ingredients I have, basically, usually you wouldn't have access to that if you're not actually, you know, in one of the big companies. So I think one of the things that Abel did differently was actually working with a big supplier and not kind of doing it themselves. Because you just simply, you know, like a lot of these ingredients, we call them captive ingredients. So we don't even sell them. So unless you're like, you know, unless you're actually working with Symrise, you don't even have access to the palette. And then that's when you get the cool smell. I mean, natural perfume smelled that way because it was kind of homemade. But also some of the ingredients we use, we have a biotech musk, for example. You're probably not going to be able to get your hands on that unless you're in a big company. Basically.
Right. That's how they get you. All these, they're like building their own exclusive scent profile of captives.
Right, and like if
you
libraries.
Exactly. If you want that smell, you got to work with Symrise.
Right.
Exactly. Also, because there's a lot of copies.
Yeah.
So if you have a big success, next thing you know, everyone's copying it, like Baccarat Rouge or something. So if you use one of your in-house ingredients in that perfume to copy it, even if they want it.
Right.
Boy, do they try, though.
So that's kind of... Yeah, they try. But, you know, Baccarat Rouge, they didn't have that captive, but if one of those key ingredients like ethyl maltol or Evernyl was a captive of theirs, and nobody would be able to copy it.
And for this reason, we have all these dupes.
Yes, exactly. The rise of the dupes.
Yeah. So what I find interesting, and I feel like this might be changing, is that the naming convention of the scents for a Belle scent is always like a color and an ingredient. Mm-hmm. And I always wonder, like, what is the process of deciding the naming format? And then, like, now that it's expanding to more conceptual names, what was the process behind that?
I guess it was a phase. Yeah, there was a phase. Abel was working with a designer in Amsterdam, and he had this concept, and it really worked at the time. But I think brands are a living thing at the end of the day. So you have to evolve. And at a certain point, it found like just a little bit, not trapping, but we could do more. So at one point, Frances was the founder. She said, you know what, I'm going to go freestyle. And and actually, she's decided to change those names as well. One of them was called Black Anise.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And she's going to rename it.
Kauchek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's something that makes sense for a while. And then I think it's organic. I mean, I think every perfume is different. One thing I don't like about, I mean, again, sometimes it works perfectly, like Cyan Nori, we're talking about seaweed.
Right.
But other times, if you're saying Black Anise, people, they have a bias before they even smell the fragrance because they're expecting it to smell like aniseed.
Yeah, right.
Which it kind of does.
I think
by
being a little bit more vague and open-ended,
it's actually
better for come to the fragrance with a kind of, you know, white page. They don't know what to expect.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
And again, some of the fragrances, we came up with the name afterwards, so in the development. But then other perfumes we've started clearly. Cyan Nori, we started with the concept already. There was Frances had a photo that she'd taken, actually kind of like the ocean view from her place, and there's kind of like a ray of sunshine coming down. And so that was the other way around. Basically, we had the name before it started.
That's so interesting because obviously changing the name of an existing product could be a huge risk for a brand, especially in fragrance when fragrance itself is obviously invisible. So all the consumer has to go on is one, the name to the bottle and to a lesser extent, maybe the campaign or if there's a celebrity face to it. Uh-huh. So, I mean, I'm always really fascinated when brands do either rebrand like this or change the product name because, you know, it's such a big part of the lifespan of the product and people's relationship to it. So I'm really excited to see how, you know, now that things are going to become like Kauchek, for example, how that's going to play in. I'm sure it's going to be a success because that name is a banger.
Yeah, that is a banger.
You know,
name.
And it feels more relevant, more sexy.
Yeah.
It's funny because you're asking me the question, but really you should be asking Frances because most of the names, she's the brains behind them. Sure, even Laundry Day, literally recreate the fragrance around her concept. Mm-hmm. And she said, imagine it's springtime, you've just hung out the clothes to dry on the line, there's a fresh breeze, sunshine, and your neighbor's cutting the lawn, so you've got the smell of fresh cut grass. And literally from that, she already had the name, Laundry Day, and then we created the fragrance. So that fragrance was really made, bespoke for that concept. And again, there's no rules. Other times, it's, you know, we're halfway through before we even really know what we're going to be calling it.
It sort of names itself in that way, it sounds like.
Well, I also think Laundry Day is pretty bold for a name for a perfume.
Yeah, that concept also is very evocative, where the people who gravitate towards like fresh, translucent scents, like they're going to love that. And then everyone else is going to be like, oh, that's boring.
Right.
But also, I mean, even just like saying laundry and things for a perfume that's out there.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's, I mean,
I was not afraid of taking risks.
Well, it's funny because, you know, laundry, I think, obviously has a scent mm-hmm. associated to it, yep. like you said, like clean and everything. But laundry as a concept isn't always something that you look forward to either. Yeah. So it's like, it's sort of like what wins out there. Is it the evocative smell or is it the feeling that it's like, mm-hmm. shit, I got to do my laundry again? So it's like, obviously, we're.
Also, I think it's becoming harder and harder to name perfumes these days with so many different perfumes out there.
I know, there's too fucking many.
Yeah. Do you have to have like a lawyer look through a list to be like, can we have this name?
Yeah, absolutely. Because wow. yeah, there's people out there who are just kind of, even though they're not launching, they kind of register names and things. Yeah. You can't use that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's annoying. I had a friend, Mark Buxton, who has a line of perfumes, and all of the names were like songs from, lines, like lyrics of songs, mm-hmm. the Rush mm-hmm. of Blood to the Head from Coldplay.
Yeah, yeah.
Sleeping and then he ended up being sued by Universal or something. They're like, take all of our lyrics off your
fault. No.
Oh my God.
That's crazy.
Yeah, did he not have a lawyer look at that before? It's a totally different use. So I'm like, I could see that maybe being okay. But
such a
yeah, but you wouldn't expect Universal. Yeah. You know, somehow. It's kind of,
right.
What have they got to lose?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of making the music cooler as well. So.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's weird. Unless the artist didn't like it for whatever reason.
No, because I think each perfume was a different song, different artist. So mm-hmm. it was kind of like, wow. I think the corporate lawyers didn't have anything better to do.
I love when we go on tangents.
I know. This was this is so interesting.
Oh, it's more fun. Yeah.
Uh-huh. It is more fun. Yeah. I guess something I'm curious about. Sable is or was a more familiar with Abel until I think a year, and my introduction to the brand was through her.
Uh-huh.
I guess I'm curious, knowing that there's a rebrand happening both in sort of like the bottle conventions and the naming conventions and everything. What does the future of Abel look like?
From my side, on the olfactive side, I think it looks amazing. Because we're really going through a phase where there's new innovations in technology where we have access to ingredients, which mm-hmm. are basically not coming from a fossil fuel origin. So the biotech, I mean, even just natural isolates. Mm-hmm. So before you needed to use mint oil and your fragrance would smell like mint. But now they actually managed to isolate from a natural oil one specific molecule, like hexanol cis-3, which is the one that smells like cut grass. You know, we didn't have the technology before necessarily to isolate the molecules so precisely. So even, you know, even things that already existed like mm-hmm. mint oil become many more kind of potential opportunities for us. I think even mm-hmm. when I started out with Abel, it was kind of like rewriting the rules, because creating these fragrances without all the typical ingredients, there wasn't really a map, let's say. Of course, there was if you look at fragrances 100 years ago, but mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you want them to smell modern. So even the time I've been working with Abel, our palette has grown so much. And I think that's why you're saying the fragrances actually smell, you know, really complex and interesting. Yeah. Because it's
the newer ones too. I feel like the newer releases smell even more complex and like more bold.
Right, absolutely. But like really, even 10 years ago, I couldn't, we did a fragrance called The Apartment, which was basically inspired.
Right, right. I remember that.
Yeah, so like there's like a laboratory at the Simrise apartment here in Paris, and we're a Haussmannian kind of building. And Francis said, oh, this is going to be this, like a really cool vibe. Let's do a fragrance, you know, just kind of inspired, like as if the apartment is your muse, which is kind of random. So like mm-hmm. we're inspired by the apartment. And I ended up adding a cherry Simtrap and also a cacao extract. The cacao extract, mm-hmm. it's not chocolatey, really. It's mm-hmm. like salty caramel, almost umami. So again, I didn't have these fragrances, these those on my palette even 5 years ago. So basically that fragrance 10 years ago, that fragrance couldn't exist. There was no natural cherry. I think the fruits are the trickiest, because mm-hmm. basically all the fruity kind of notes were kind of molecules, you know, fossil fuel origin. So having these natural fruits is a game changer. Suddenly you can have a natural fragrance that smells like cherry.
Right.
Yeah, wow. Right.
And that plays into how you said, which I think is so interesting and accurate, that a brand is an evolving thing. It's a living, breathing sort of ecosystem of its own. And I love that you now have access to these new things that do fit within Abel's sort of natural POV that you didn't have when you started. So you can keep evolving while staying brand right.
Yeah. Right. I think it's really important, because I think probably when you stop evolving, that's when things get a little bit, you know, a claustrophobic.
That's boring.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the new bottles look incredible.
The new bottles are so sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, they're like, it looks more tailor-made, I think. The
so chic.
The last ones.
They're like nice and weighty.
Yeah. I think it's kind of interesting. The last ones, it was a designer from Amsterdam. And I think you can almost see that. It's a little bit more kind of minimalist, a little bit more standard looking. I don't know. And then the new design is ready.
Yeah,
you're not going to mistake
that
for another brand.
It looks custom.
No, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, whereas a lot of these brands, you know, I guess I think when niche brands first came out, I think having that standard bottle was kind of something that separated them from other brands. You know, it's clearly not Yves Saint Laurent or that. So I think it's going to another phase as well. I think even the more independent brands now, they're not just going for that standard look.
Right.
Yeah. Everyone has to differentiate now too, because the market is just so saturated.
Exactly.
But this was like a super, super well done rebrand.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see all of them together on the shelf.
Yes, definitely. and all the new scents to come and everything you've got for us. We'll be keeping a close eye.
Yeah, my first reaction was like, well, because I was expecting a smaller iteration in terms of design. But Frances made a really big step there.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, people would say to me, oh, but it's a natural perfumery brand, but, you know, what about the packaging? And now even, you know, the packaging is recyclable and it's recycled plastic and things. So it's like actually much more on brand as well. So it's not just visual. I think really in terms of what the brand stands for is better represented with this new design.
That Symrise's technology to extract scents from water that's been infused with other things is so cool.
The agua fresca of perfume technology.
Literally. We should get them on the... We should talk about that.
We should, them, honestly. You know? I'm so curious about that technology.
How?
Who do we know at Symrise?
They're about to know us.
Yeah, they're about to know us. Knock, knock.
Yeah.
We'll hold this then.
No,
that is
cool.
So cool because I don't know. I know obviously natural means different things to different people.
Yes.
But Abel's fragrances are like so sophisticated that I was like... Maybe they mean natural in like a spiritual way. I don't know.
An idea.
I was like, they smell so complex and well-balanced that I'm like, there have to be synthetics in here.
Yeah.
So it's like really interesting. I've never heard of that technology before.
No, same. And I always think it's really refreshing because it's a question that we need to ask, but it's always, which way is this going to go?
Yeah.
What does natural mean to your brand?
Yeah.
And we've gotten a lot of really concise, coherent answers. And then we've gotten a lot of storytelling, which is bullshit. Yeah. And he lives in the first camp, which is great.
Yeah.
And it's nice to be able to understand the how of the naturals, because as we know on this podcast, synthetics are not a bad thing. They're often a benefit in a fragrance, both to longevity, to
stability
and the scent itself. So synthetics are a good thing, but it's nice to see like when it's a balance, what the naturals mean.
I get a lot of press releases or press emails about new brands that are like, so-and-so made this hypoallergenic fragrance brand when they discover that they're allergic to synthetic fragrance. And I was like, girl, no, you're not, because then you couldn't interact with anything in this world. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's not the synthetics they're allergic to. Yeah. It's just the fragrance in general.
Yeah.
Because we're...
But to say this is devoid of synthetics, therefore it's hypoallergenic, I'm like...
No, it's the type of... fragrance.
Yes, the specific fragrance,
whether it's natural or synthetic, because fragrance in itself is an irritant.
Exactly.
I'm in the weeds with this because we're releasing a hypoallergenic fragrance in 3 weeks.
Oh,
so
really?
Yeah, so that's why I know it's like, it's hard to claim hypoallergenic for anything that's scented, because the irritant itself is the fragrance, and you have to do a lot of clinical testing and have to pay a lot for clinical testing, and I've gone over all of those clinicals, and it's not the synthetic. You can be irritated by, probably more frequently, by a natural oil.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, synthetic. More things
it's,
than a natural
it's just, and I know there's a more nuanced conversation to be had about that than that, but...
I see a lot of these press emails, and I'm like, that's not it.
That's not it. And
that's not it. No,
it's also, the solve to that isn't a hypoallergenic fragrance.
Yeah, isn't because, making a fragrance brand about it.
Yeah,
so like,
because that could still irritate a super sensitive person. Because, again, you can be... certified hypoallergenic and still irritate someone. It's just a matter of like risk management.
You're the expert.
I'm not the expert.
Between the two of us, right now, you are the expert.
It's just been the last 2 months of my life.
I'm just old man yells at cloud.
Well, that's why the podcast is so good.
Yeah, but I'm so excited for the new Abel fragrances that we talked about. I'm like, give them to me. And I'm
I think I have the apartment.
You might.
Oh, is this new? Is this carton new?
Yeah.
The Brat Green carton?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know the packaging is in that Brat Chartreuse color too. And I'm like, very topical.
I like it. I like the design and all that.
So you can get these online. I believe that they are also at the only fragrance retailer in the world, Stell. And yeah, we encourage you to go out and smell them. Yeah. Fuck me. We did not promo Arabelle's book talk.
We could do it now.
We could do it now at the end of the episode. If you're still with us, we are doing a book talk to celebrate the launch of
TALK, not TOK.
Yeah, yeah. To celebrate the launch of House of Beauty by friend of the show, Arabelle Sicardi. Yes. This book has been in production for many years. And it's going to really be a game changer. We're very honored that they asked us to chat about the book with them.
Yeah. It's at Books Are Magic on the 23rd of October.
I got to find out where the hell that is.
You know, there's two locations, so I do actually have to ask.
Is one in Manhattan, one in Brooklyn?
I believe so.
I think it's one in Brooklyn, but I'm not sure. We should
probably figure that out.
We'll post about it.
You know what? Yeah. If anything, I know Arabelle just posted about it.
Yes.
So look at their socials.
Yes.
But that's exciting.
So.
Yeah. I got her book mailer, like the special mailer package, and it had the scented bookmark.
Mm.
And it was a Jouissance scent.
Nice.
And I think it's like the notebook scent, which makes sense. Cahier.
Did it have the coin?
It had the coin, yeah.
Nice.
It's funny because she gave me a coin before, so I was like, I have two coins now.
Collecting them.
Yeah, that will be really cool. That's later this month. Or by the time this episode airs, that's probably the week after, actually.
Eek.
So it's a week from now.
God, I'm going to throw up.
But in the meantime, you can check out our website, smellyoulater.live, where you can leave us a voice message on our hotline. You can find our brand new merch, which is very cute and cozy. You can follow us on Instagram. We're at smellyoulater.mp3. I am at Sableteeth Tigra.
I'm at Tynan Buck. And until next time, we will smell you later.